Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you doing?
Fine, I think.
Yes, no, there's a lot to discuss today. And also Mr. Maurice Ruitt. Maurice, how are you doing?
How's it, guys?
So we have to talk, of course, about today's big story, which is that there has been some sort of deal, the details of which we've gotten the kind of, I guess, the draft version or the first version of this deal. And that is the framework, which the whole thing is going to be negotiated under, between the ANC, DA, and IFP to form a government of national unity, the GNU, as it will no doubt become known widely in the media. And Herman and I were very skeptical of this precise kind of agreement. We thought that the IFP and DA should not take up cabinet positions, which seems very much like it's going to be the case, based off of what all the parties have been saying. But we're going to think about this and talk about this and, you know, kind of wonder what direction this whole thing is going to go in. So Fikile Mbalula and Helen Ziller signed this document, this framework agreement, which is quite funny because, you know, when we did an episode last week on why we thought the coalition was a bad idea, our thumbnail literally contained Helen Ziller, Fikile Mbalula. So the sort of what seemed almost insane a week ago has become reality. The document they've signed details the executive decision-making process of the Government of National Unity, a conflict-breaking mechanism, and guidelines for policy-making and the finalization of a national budget. They say the agreement will be made public and will serve as a precursor to a comprehensive agreement that will be concluded in the next few weeks. They basically said they didn't have time to work out a full deal yet. We've already seen a number of elections and legislatures around the country. As we're recording this, a parliament, I don't think, has voted yet on the speaker, was currently voting on the speaker. But in some of the provincial legislatures, it already looks like this deal is coming to fruition. The DA is getting deputy speaker positions in parliament, it looks like. They've gotten the deputy speaker position in the Gauteng legislature. And in KZN, the ANC is taking the speakership role, which means that MK looks like it's going to be shut out of government in KZN, at least for now. With the NFP finally deciding to go with the Government of National Unity after flirting with the MK. So we are at an interesting moment in our country's political development. These two very bitter enemies, the ANC and the DA, are now in government together, and they have very different worldviews, and there's a lot of personal animosity between their members. The IFP, of course, also has its share of bad blood with the ANC, a lot of it being literal blood rather than sort of war of words. So, Herman, let me start with you. How is this thing going to work? Could it work? What do you think is the future for this new government of national unity?
So, as someone who's been trying my utmost to push against this idea, speaking to as many people, writing as much as possible, pushing against this, I hope. I've been wrong, because our country certainly needs me to be wrong. This thing can, even in my criticism of the idea of a coalition government and the government of national unity, I've tried to be open about what could be the metrics for a successful GNU. I mean, it's the old Karl Popper idea, is that if your position isn't falsifiable, then it isn't a rational or logical position. So I've tried to make my criticism falsifiable, that there are objective circumstances under which my concerns are invalid. And the most significant one would be reform to the civil service. You could have, And we had an episode about that, Nick. You could have great policy or awful policy, but the civil service is ultimately the engine that drives government. And the merit-based civil service, professionalized civil service noises coming from this document, this agreement between the ANC and the DA, I mean, that's positive. It's the closest we've come to a rejection of CADA deployment. And one could be cautiously optimistic about something like that. Now, of course, the devil's not only in the details, but in the implementation. If this government fixes the civil service within the next 2 years, I think it has a shot of going full term and being quite successful. If it doesn't, then the questions remain. And to critique my own position, it's not impossible. It's unlikely, and I think the vested political interest in the civil service and the public sector unions and all that, and the ANC's weakness, I think that all complicates the calculation. But the Government of National Unity of 94, accomplished in a remarkably short amount of time, a complete reform of state machinery. The four provinces became nine. The police services were amalgamated. The prosecuting authority was managed. The civil service was fundamentally reformed within something like 12 months, 9 to 12 months, or a bit more. But the point is, it might work. But I remain worried that the politics of this in 2 years from now at the 2026 local government elections places South Africans in a situation where the ANC, with a track record of failure in government, and the DA, with a track record of relative impotence in government, go to the people in 2026 and both get rejected.
Yeah, so the stakes are very high in this. While, you know, I agree with you, this is not the strategy I would have taken. As you say, I think there's a lot of opportunity here for things to get done. And it's going to be very important for the public, for civil society, to keep a close eye on this thing and judge it fairly. Is it actually changing the way things are done in the country? Is there real policy reform in some of the directions? Or are we just in the status quo? In which case, this thing will not have worked. It does need to make genuine changes to the way that government is going to be moving forward. I was very amused when I was reading a Daily Maverick story that has already been updated. So this version is not up on the website anymore. But talking about the first sort of reporting on this Government of National Unity deal, and it included this line, which I thought was hilarious for how low it sets the bar. Talking about the GNU's agreement, it says, "This includes taking the bold step to introduce merit-based appointments." I mean, I wouldn't call it a bold step, but right, that is actually what we need to do in the civil service. The civil service is in desperate need of reform, and it needs to be decaded. And that is, I think, one of the key points here, which the Government of National Unity will have to be judged on. Does the civil service just continue to be filled very directly with dedicated ANC cadres, or does it actually become a much more dynamic place where non-partisan political people can actually get a foot into senior positions in the civil service and become, sort of judged on their work, not on their party loyalty? Marius, what are your thoughts on this bizarre new world we find ourselves in?
At the moment, I'm feeling pretty good about things. It's the first time, I'm going to give something away here, but the first time ever that a party I voted for is in national government. And thinking about it, I think this is probably the first time ever that a party you could call that at least advertises itself as liberal has ever been in national government in South Africa. We go back to 1910. I don't know if you could call the South African Party or the United Party liberal. Obviously, the National Party wasn't. And the ANC and so on, you wouldn't describe them as liberal. They definitely wouldn't consider themselves as liberals. But yeah, there's a lot of risks. I think it's quite perilous. But I think the DA has probably done the right thing. I think if the DA hadn't done this, there was probably a good chance of the ANC going with the EFF and perhaps MK as well. And this new progressive front, whatever that's just been formed in parliament between the EFF and UDM and Al Jamaa and one or two other small parties, I think ATM, I think that could be quite a big risk. And if I'm going to be very optimistic now, I'm probably a little bit naive, as I was saying to you before the show, Nick, maybe we've finally seen the real Ramaphosa, a man who has some testicular fortitude and has now decided this is he has to grasp the nettle now. If he wants to fix the country, this is what he's got to do. He's got to keep the anti-constitutionalists and the race nationalists away from governments as far as possible. And he's got to work with the, you know, people who want the country to work and who support the constitution. And this is, and he's decided to seize this moment. I can see Herman's rolling his eyes there quite a lot, but
I'm listening and trying not to pull faces.
No, like I'm saying this is I'm not saying I necessarily believe this, but I think this is one way of looking at what's happened, because it probably would have been much easier within the NEC if Cyril Ramaphosa had decided, okay, fine, whatever, we'll go with the EFF and one or two other small parties, fine, Malema, you can be deputy president. We won't give you finance, but we'll give you trade and industry or whatever the case is. I think he probably would have had not that much resistance within the NEC if he decided to do that. He probably wouldn't have had that much resistance from the SACP and Kusatu. A lot of people on social media would have backed him, but he's actually decided to take the difficult path now. And he's getting a lot of flack for it from within the party and from social media and so on. And I think he's actually made the hard decision here. I think he's put South Africa before the ANC perhaps. But there's, as I say, a lot can still happen. And 2027 is also going to be a big year for South Africa, because that's when the next ANC conference is. And Ramaphosa won't stand. I think he would be discouraged from standing. We know Thabo Mbeki tried to stand for third term as ANC president and he lost. So it all depends who runs, who stands for that position. I mean, Paul Mashatile is probably a front-runner because he's deputy president. But I think we'll probably see people like Fikile Mbalula and Ron Lamola also emerging as possible leadership candidates. And out of those three guys, Mbalula would probably be our best bet. But yeah, a lot can still happen. I mean, still 3 years to go.
So one of our criticisms up till now, Ramaphosa, has been that he was the country's, still is, the country's most popular politician. And that he seemed to have, in many cases, defeated his opponents within the ANC. After all, Ace Magashule is not the Secretary General of the ANC currently. And yet he still didn't take forward any kind of real path towards reform. And it's been interesting to watch the sort of ANC internal squabbles in the lead up to this, because it's a little bit, it perhaps suggests that Ramaphosa was not necessarily quite as strong as we thought he might be. He still did get his way, so maybe that's an exaggeration. But I don't know, Herman, you know, do you actually think he can hold the ANC together? I mean, after an election result like that, and after Ramaphosa being the leader of the party when it gets 40% of the vote, do you think his political career can survive? And without him, will a government of national unity actually continue to go forward?
I think heading into this election, the ANC had two unifying factors. Ramaphosa's popularity, as by far and away the most popular politician in the country, despite his approval rating dropping by, 20 points. And the other and perhaps more important unifying factor is patronage networks. In the sense that the ANC is very much based on the idea of you scratch my back and I don't kill your counselor. Sorry, you scratch my back and I scratch yours. So there is this situation where the ANC might come out of this election and out of this coalition having lost both its unifying factors, both Ramaphosa's popularity and access to patronage, having been what kept the party pulling roughly in the same direction. Because we've said this many times, is I've seen the ANC as divided into two camps, not the good guys and the bad guys, but the communists and the kleptocrats. And the one thing that they agree on is in practice that the patronage network should be state control. And now the one bunch wants to, take your money, and the other bunch want to steal your money. But they agree on the importance of the patronage networks being accessible and available. And if the DA poses a threat to those patronage networks, as they ought to, it'll be a very painful experience for the ANC to start shutting down those patronage networks, because they will be committing a very slow suicide. Now, that is not to disqualify the ANC as a formidable political beast. You don't get to be 100 and 12 years old as a political party without being quite good at surviving and outmaneuvering your opponents. And perhaps that is my greatest fear now, is that the DA sees this as the culmination of a project and that they can now go, ah, right, sorted, let's govern. Where the ANC will see this as the start of a very long guerrilla war for control of the government levers of power. The ANC is good at managing power relations. They are good at playing the game of power. They've perfected that over many years under extreme circumstances. And if the DA gets outmaneuvered in the politics of this, I remain very, very concerned. Something that is worth pointing out, two things just very briefly, is if this government of national unity is successful, and it's the 2027 ANC leadership election, it'll help Fikile Mbalula that his signature is on this deal. He will be able to say, look, you know, I negotiated the ANC back from the brink. I should be trusted with the leadership of that part of the party. The other thing that is worth pointing out is a senior member of the DP, well, DA, both actually, of Tony Leon's team once told me that the reason they went for a deal with the IFP in the early 2000s,
2006,
late 90s, was because they wanted to.
Oh yeah, you're right. 2004.
Was that they wanted to show that the DA isn't exclusively a white party, that it can work with what is perceived as a black party, the IFP. And there might be a similar calculation in this, is if this thing works, even a bit, or even a while, the ANC might just have killed their most potent argument against the DA, that has traditionally been the DA is a white party, they don't care about black people, they'll bring apartheid back given half a chance. So if this works, there is also the political upside, but I, as optimistic as Marius might be, I'm worried. I feel a bit like Luke Skywalker just saying, you know, I've got a bad feeling about this and I'm not quite sure if that's just bad writing or bad analysis.
Look, you know, as a political analyst, this is kind of the worst thing to say, but I sort of am finding myself very much in the position of adopting the policy of we'll see whether this was a good or bad thing. I think there's going to be some important metrics on which to judge this government. For example, does the expropriation bill continue to be pushed through and implemented? Does it get repealed? Does it actually come into force? Does it get challenged in constitution and then the ANC abandons it? That's an important metric, right? If the DA is not able to prevent something like that, which it says is unconstitutional and it is opposed to, what's the point of them being in government? What, are they supposed to sit there and implement the expropriation bill along with other members of cabinet? So that's an important thing. There's also going to have to be, you know, careful examination of new appointments in the civil service. Is the Public Services Commission actually becoming independent and holding back cadre deployment? Are ANC cadres still being appointed to government positions? These are going to be important things to keep an eye on. We can sit here and we can say, yeah, this will happen, that'll happen, but you know, now it's time to actually watch and see what happens.
And can I quickly just pause you on that civil service point? The DA doesn't have a flawless track record in getting rid of ANC cadres in governments that take over. In Joburg and in Ekurhuleni, I know that the DA took conscious decisions not to take action against some officials, cadres appointed by the ANC, because they thought they could work with them and they could bring them around to their way of thinking, only for those exact officials to, when the political winds started changing, just to flip back to being quite loyal to the ANC. So the DA must be very, very, very careful. And very firm and very empiric on any civil service reform. Nice sentiments, good words, promises won't be enough. The thing that'll speak loudest here and that the DA must demand is actual deliverable, understandable change, and not just a commission to decide, to deliberate, to institute an inquiry, to make merit-based appointments, but actual, this person is merit-based, appoint them, that person isn't merit-based, fire them.
I think another pitfall for both the IFP and the DA is, particularly the DA, they've had a little bit of corruption scandals here or there from time to time, but generally nothing too bad. And now it's going to be very important to resist the seductions of power, because they are indeed seductions, and they're on a very human level. Suddenly everyone starts sucking up to you. Suddenly, you're being offered a blue light convoy, which can get you through traffic whenever you want. You're being offered bodyguards as a minister, and you're being made to feel very important. And there's lots of officials all the time taking you to events with all sorts of dignitaries and talking about how, wise and thoughtful your input is, and writing your speeches for you and doing your laundry and everything you could possibly imagine. And it is very easy for even the best people to fall into that trap and go, maybe this is not because, I'm here because of a precarious political deal worked out by two old antagonists to hold the country together against anti-constitutionalists. Maybe I'm here because I'm great and I'm fantastic, and actually I should stay in government forever. And maybe I should take a little bit for myself because I'm so wonderful. And that is something that everyone needs to.
Did you just say Martinus von Skalkwyk? My audio went a bit.
Maurice, what do you make of all this? Do you agree with me and Herman? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much going on. And yeah, I think it's going to be very, the DA's got to play a very clever game here. I think while there are probably people in the ANC, maybe more than we think, who want this to work and want South Africa to work, there's also going to be a lot of people who are opposed to this for various reasons, whether it's ideology or, just moneyed interests or whatever the case is. So it's going to, the DA is going to have to in some way drain the swamp, but they're not going to be able to do that without the ANC. And they're going to have to, I think the DA is going to have to be also careful about what kind of concessions it demands. Because also another risk, as I've said, is even though there's a signed agreement, what could also quite easily happen is a year from now, the ANC says, we're sick of all this shit. We actually going to ask the ANC, the EFF, and the small parties to form a government. You guys can go back to opposition benches, it's fine. So it also depends, I suppose, what kind of GNU agreement is formed. Is it GNU or NU? I'm not sure, actually. But anyway, Wildebeest agreement, whatever. Maybe that's easier. So, yeah, it's... But that all said, it's a very exciting time for South Africa. I think a year ago, very few of us thought we'd be in a place where the DA is going to be national government, or we're looking at the end of possibly the end of ANC governance completely in South Africa. So things have changed quite quickly, and these things often do. I don't think anybody in 1988 or 1989 thought that democracy in South Africa was only 5 years away. So things can happen quickly. And I was actually talking to a colleague about, what could happen in South Africa. And he made that exact point. He said, in the mid-1980s, you would never think that 10 years from then, the head of the National Union of Mine Workers, as in Cyril Ramaphosa, and Rolf Meyer, who is a cabinet minister, would be discussing how to bring democracy to South Africa. And that is a very good point. But that all said, nobody in Zimbabwe in the early 1990s would have thought that 10 years from then, the country would be collapsing and you'd be having hyperinflation of 1,000,000%, and that ZANU-PF, even though ZANU-PF, we know ZANU-PF was a terrible organization, but they managed to behave fairly well outside of Matabele land between 1980 and 2000. And then they started carrying on. So I think these things can change very quickly from being optimistic to pessimistic. So we all have to be vigilant. And I think we need to support, if you are a DA supporter, I'm assuming most people who are listening are at least sympathetic to the party. I think we need to support the party in this. And this is probably our best shot right now of getting to a country where we're growing at 5 or 6% a year economically, and we can actually start making a proper dent in things like poverty and unemployment. Because if we don't do that, we can forget about South Africa being a place that everybody wants to live in. You know, we need a country where we have unemployment of 10% and poverty of whatever, you know, much lower than it is now. Because I think that has been one of the biggest tragedies of post-apartheid South Africa is that things such as poverty and unemployment, we haven't really managed to change that. And how many people simply, they're born into lives of penury and, you know, hunger. And, you know, nobody wants to live in a country like that.
So let's talk now a little bit about what is, I guess, the new opposition. The EFF is already making the claim, probably with very real justification, that the new official leader of the opposition is MK, and that the EFF intends to support them. The EFF has also gotten together a bunch of other smaller parties, including Al-Jamaha and the UDM, in a group that are calling themselves the Progressive Caucus, who are going to obviously attack the government from the left. So, Herman, what do you make of this? I mean, what now is going to happen, do you think, in the opposition political space in South Africa? A party like Action SA, I think, has a lot of opportunity now to maybe reverse itself from its massive decline, but massively disappointing results in the most recent election, and maybe see if, especially if the coalition agreement doesn't go well, it can maybe try and grab space there. Of course, you know, that's also going to take a lot of skill itself. The DP didn't go from 1.7% of the vote to the official opposition without a lot of skill and careful maneuvering to one day get into government. And there's also this question now of what MK does. We've kind of alluded to this in the previous couple of episodes, but MK, if indeed they don't get the premiership in KZN, they've already lost the speakership vote. Does that mean that they're completely locked out of the patronage network for the next 2 years? Because that's when the municipal elections are. In which case, that's not a nice place to be for such a patronage-dependent organization like MK. Also, is the EFF got an opportunity to revitalize itself here after its disappointing election results? Or do you think that it's also going to struggle to regain its mojo? What's your take on all this?
So one of the fundamental reasons I was against a government of national unity and a coalition is I thought that the opposition benches and the leader of the opposition position specifically is worth it, is powerful, is influential, is useful. And internally within the IRR and within the sort of liberal family, where there was debate going on about what's the best way to defang the populists and the Marxist radicals. And the thinking was, well, you exclude them from power and you get an ANC-DA coalition. And by that way, you know, MK not involved, EFF not involved. Where I fear that might be a miscalculation is that the political narrative is shaped by tension between two points. In terms of engagement, if you look at election campaigns, if you look at debates, if you look at any contest of views, the scope of that contest of views is defined by what the protagonist and the antagonist, or both sides, agree to disagree on. The terms of engagement between both parties, that defines the scope of debate. There are, if there are certain baseline assumptions, like in this context of the Daily Friend show, it's very unlikely for us, someone here, to question liberalism as a good thing in total, because we work on the assumption that on that we agree, but on other things we disagree, and we'll agree on those things. And by agreeing not to disagree on liberalism and accepting it as a base compromise, the sort of foundation of our scope, we end up discussing ideas within the context of liberalism. And the same happens in a parliamentary democracy. Bipartisan consensus is what defines the scope of political debate. Your government and your opposition together define what is worth clashing over. And with the ANC and the DA on both sides of the speaker's chair, the clash would have been about things that MK and the EFF would have been excluded from. They would have had the opportunity to scope the debate about, we agree that the Constitution should be the foundation of our democracy, but how to implement that, or how to, you know, make real its promise. Now you have ceded the opposition benches, the opposition bully pulpit that the DA spent 30 years building towards, in the moment of the ANC's greatest vulnerability, in the moment where parliamentary opposition could really have exerted influence, you've just given that bully pulpit to MK, EFF, unreliable, dangerous, radical, and often, you know, quite murderous entities. So who becomes the opposition now? Well, whoever it is, it isn't good. If it's Julius Malema, it's going to be, I wouldn't be surprised by a resurgence of the EFF. Because if we look at what their political capital has been built on parliamentary stunts, on using parliament as a theater and running it as a show. If it is MK, my fear is that MK might naturally collapse in and of itself, but the one thing that might unite it is attacking a DA, ANC, IFP government from both the left and the right. So the abandoning of the opposition benches is possibly, I think, the greatest miscalculation in this all, because it gives EFF a route back to relevance that I think they could have been deprived of. And I think it unnecessarily scopes out the debate from a moderate discussion to actually a quite extreme thing, that the public won't see the ANC and the DA disagreeing on how to get universal healthcare, one through a state mechanism, one through a market mechanism. You will see the ANC and the DA on one side and MK and EFF on the other side, dragging the debate to whether the Constitution is at all legitimate. And that scares me. I think that's tactically short-sighted.
If I may play some devil's advocate, I think one of the very big problems that MK and the EFF have is in their sort of internal structures. So the EFF's problem is that it is far too much a party of Julius Malema's ego and will. Mm-hmm. And he, yes, that in some ways helps, because it means that no one can ever challenge him and they're never divided. But the downside of that is that he fires, what I've heard is one of the EFF's best election managers in KZN, very publicly in a very humiliating way just before the election.
Yeah.
And that the EFF is kind of, you know, it's like a band that had a one-hit wonder and now it's got a lead guitarist who's just kind of hogging the limelight and pushing everyone else out, and he's firing mm-hmm. everyone from the band who's not him, who challenges him, and he's just, you know, completely a has-been. Likewise, MK, it's not clear that they have anything approaching a party structure at all currently. And of course, it's led by Jacob Zuma, who is 82 years old and is a very divisive figure in South African politics. You know, I don't think
Jacob, he's positively youthful against the American presidential candidates.
Yeah, so the old age home convention that is American politics right now, but that's neither here nor there.
The geriatric seven. I mean, this is,
so that's a very big problem for MK, because if Zuma gets too old to carry on with the party, what do they have left? They've got a bunch of different factions, and they may have some leaders in there who are locally have some sort of ability, but it's kind of difficult to see how they could sort of grasp the mantle of opposition here. You need to be quite organized and disciplined in order to actually take advantage of that opposition space.
Can I just come in very, very briefly there? I hear what you're saying. I think that's right. But then that sort of undermines the whole argument of let's keep them out. If they're going to collapse and they are weak parties, then the argument to treat them as a substantive threat and therefore get the ANC and the DA together into coalition, because that's a way to keep them out of power because they're such a threat. If they're going to collapse in opposition, they would have collapsed either way. And I just think that you've now given them a longer lease on life.
Ah, but you see, to counter your counter is that they are both very patronage-based parties, and they've now been locked out of the system. There's no, there are going to be no goodies. Who knows? Maybe the EFF is going to lose its spots in Joburg and Ekurhuleni after this. I mean, I don't know if that's actually going to happen. Maybe it will. Yeah, maybe Tone as well. So if that happens, then the party is going to find itself with a lot of people wondering, why are we still here? Because we don't get really access to any of the good stuff. We'll have to see. Morris, let's give the final thoughts to you. What do you make of the future of the opposition space in South African politics?
Yeah, it's going to be quite tricky. That was one of the problems that the National Party found in the original GNU, have you said, I must find out if you say GNU or NU. Was it an opposition party? Was it part of the government? And I mean, obviously, the environment is very different now, because there was a legally required GNU according to the interim constitution. And there was supposed to be consensus, but the ANC could do whatever they wanted because they had 62% of the seats in parliament. Things are very different now. And this is not a legally required GNU. This is one that's has been a voluntary one. But yeah, it'll be quite difficult for the DA to still show it's the opposition while being in government. And I think Action SA is already trying to position itself as the actual opposition in parliament, which, I mean, I'd be much happier with Action SA being the opposition than EFF or MK, but that all said. But there's something to keep an eye on next week. There is a whole bunch of by-elections, I think 7 or 8 in KwaZulu-Natal, and a few in Beaufort West and in Cape Town as well. And MK is standing a couple of candidates. So that is something to watch to see if they have any kind of momentum. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if MK wins a couple of those awards, but it's something to watch for the future because, as you guys say, if you keep them out of provincial government for now, they've got no other patronage taps. But I wouldn't be surprised if they got some moles in the ANC. And yeah, things are things are going to get quite exciting. Well, exciting in a bad way. I'm not sure. Maybe exciting in a good way. But yeah. KwaZulu-Natal is going to be definitely a place to watch. But yeah, that all said, it's living in a multi-party democracy. It's quite fun so far. Let's hope it remains that way. Always lived in a multi-party democracy since 1994. Let's say multi-party competitive democracy. Let's clarify that.
I will say that, I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen from here, but it's probably going to be interesting. Whether that's good or bad, it remains to be seen. Interesting new era has just dawned in South African politics. And in 10 years, we're going to look back on this as a very important milestone on our road. You know, we'll either be looking at it from our kind of collapsed gulag shelters while we're scratching for food in rubbish piles, or from a much more prosperous, better country. Time will tell, and how the actors play their parts and how society and the voters play their parts will also be very important to determining the future of this. Of course, we will have a little bit of a chance to exercise our thoughts on how this whole thing is going in 2 years, in 2026, when we have the municipal government elections. That obviously won't directly affect politics on a national level, but the results there will, I think, very much determine the future of this thing if it's still around by then. Anyway, I hope that you found this show interesting today. We will obviously continue to analyze the various aspects of it, talk about the details of the deal as they emerge. Who gets which cabinet positions is going to be quite interesting, and that's going to be an early sign of how this thing is probably going to work. And then also, can the ANC and DA in particular overcomes a lot of that personal animosity? That's going to be interesting to watch too, on a very human level, at least. Herman?
A very good thing. I see two comments in the section saying, why does Herman look a bit frazzled today? And someone says, true, he seems very frazzled indeed. Yes, I've got a four-year-old baby in my house, a four-week-old baby in my house. And someone commented earlier on my hairline. Shame on you. I cry my baby to sleep these days. So yes, there's cause for the frazzled. I'm already in the era of power sharing, and my government it's not that has been bad. Taken over.
Someone once said in the comments, what was it? I think it was something along the lines of your moustache and beard, referring to me, make me want to throw up. So if what you're getting is a receding hairline comment, I think it's not so bad. Anyway, okay. We'll see you all soon, and have a wonderful day, everyone. Keep your eyes on the news, because I think it's going to be much more interesting reading than it's been up until now. Cheers, everyone.